Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
What we saw happening on the East Coast in 2013 with this surge of fentanyl is just now hitting us up here.
Alaska now leads the nation in drug overdose deaths. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 12th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the State House still has to decide if it agrees with the Senate's budget proposal.
This budget, this $5,500 PFD, is predicated on the idea that oil is going to average $101 per barrel.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. NEA Alaska members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at NEAAlaska.org and help NEA Alaska reach, teach, and inspire all Alaska students. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
Alaska had the highest increase of drug overdose deaths in the nation last year, according to provisional data released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Wednesday. Alaska's rate of drug overdose deaths is usually lower than the national average. Jessica Philly with the state's health department says Alaska is now leading the nation because of the synthetic opioid fentanyl.
It's just been a slower process to get up here. So I think what we saw happening on the East Coast in 2013 with this surge of fentanyl is just now hitting us up here. So we just have more of an influx of the drug.
Alaska's rate of overdose deaths increased by more than 70% last year compared to 15% nationally. And national overdose deaths reached an all-time high. The state's health department recommends all Alaskans carry naloxone, a drug that can rapidly reverse an overdose. Two agencies are sending donations to the villages of Sleepmute and Red Devil after ice jams caused flooding over the weekend. The villages sit about 9 miles apart along the Kuskokwim River. The water damaged roads and homes in both communities and washed out a portion of the airstrip in Red Devil, the only way in and out of town. The closure has made it impossible to get supplies into the community. The airstrip in Sleepmute remains undamaged. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation said it was able to deliver supplies to the community yesterday, including meals, water sampling kits, drinking water, and safety gear. They plan to drop off similar items in Red Devil once the village's runway fully reopens. The Red Cross of Alaska also plans to make deliveries. A spokesperson said volunteers will hand out blankets, toiletries, and cleaning kits to help prevent mold and other long-term damage caused by flooding. It remains uncertain whether the Alaska legislature will approve $5,500 payments to Alaskans this fall. That's the permanent fund dividend amount plus an energy assistance check in the state Senate's budget proposal. The House approved a lower amount, $2,600, and it can now either vote to seek a compromise or agree with the Senate's version. For individual legislators in an election year, stalling a bigger PFD in the name of sustainable budgeting is a tough call, especially with oil prices high. But for others, it's clear-cut. If oil prices drop, the state will spend down savings and have to make up the difference with taxes, drastic cuts, or both. Reporter James Brooks with the Alaska Beacon says recent House votes have been postponed as leaders fear their coalition will cave.
Late last night, the House was expected to vote, had been on the calendar to vote. The Speaker of the House, Louise Stutes, abruptly canceled that meeting, rescheduling the start for 10 a.m. today. That didn't happen, and the start is now at a time to be determined. And the belief is, and the House majority has been open about talking about its desire to have a sustainable dividend, an amount that can be paid consistently year over year. $5,500 isn't that, but at the same time, there's a lot of support for that number. Everybody wants $5,500 if it's possible. But because the majority is reluctant to do that, they've effectively postponed that vote to negotiate and see if it's possible to send this to a drawing board and come out with a lower number.
And these numbers are somewhat based on the price of oil right now, right? Or projections for the price of oil. So what happens if there's a bigger PFD, but the price of oil goes down in the future?
That's the big drawback. So right now, this budget, this $5,500 PFD is predicated on the idea that oil is going to average $101 per barrel from July 1st of this year through June 30th of next year. And even if that happens, even if it's $100 a barrel, there's not enough money to pay for this big payout. The budget calls for the state to spend from savings in order to make up the difference, a little less than $1 billion. But if oil prices go down, the amount of money that needs to be pulled out of savings increases. So let's say oil is $93 a barrel instead of $101. At that point, the state drains its statutory budget reserve, the first of the big savings accounts that it uses to balance the budget. Well, what happens if oil is below that? So in order to spend from the next savings account, the constitutional budget reserve, the legislature needs a supermajority vote, which it doesn't have right now. But let's say it gets that. Then it can go all the way down to 75 per barrel, and there's enough money if you completely drain that constitutional budget reserve.
Is there much of a sense that part of the reason that there hasn't been a vote as of right now on whether to go to conference committee or accept the Senate's budget, is there a sense that that is tied to this being an election year, that people are having a hard time, you know, wrestling with that decision?
Right. A lot of the people in the House right now, especially members of the Republican House minority, campaigned 2 years ago on large PFDs and said they would do what they could to have a large payout, to stick with a traditional formula that hasn't been used since 2016, but remains in state law. That formula calls for a $4,200 payout. Legislators have said that that's unreasonable, but now there's enough money to pay for it if things go well. And so that's the choice, is will folks who have championed the traditional formula follow through, even though it's a pretty big risk at this point?
James, this is the first time that we're talking to you as you have transitioned over from the Anchorage Daily News to the Alaska Beacon, which is a new news outlet in Alaska. And I just wondered if you could tell us real quickly about what that is. What is the Alaska Beacon?
So it's a nonprofit news agency funded by donations, and the idea is to put reporters in state houses across the country. The Beacon is an affiliate of the National States Newsroom, which is the nonprofit that's doing this work. Alaska is just one of many states now. More than half the states have an affiliate. And so it's me, Andrew Kitchenman, Gareth Rosen, and Lisa Fu, all experienced journalists, and we're going to try this out and see how it works.
Well, very cool. And definitely appreciate you still talking to me and talking to me from the Capitol. It's like you never left because you didn't. So
No, I'm still doing what I'm doing.
All right. Well, that was James Brooks with the Alaska Beacon. James, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, years after spotting a sunken ship, a diver sets out to identify it.
It was a huge thrill. You know, I can only think of a couple of things in my life that really did it for me, and that was definitely one of them.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska employers, did you know there is a no-cost, no-deductible way to bond at-risk employees, including ex-offenders and individuals recovering from drug addictions, even when your own insurer will not provide bonding? Information about Fidelity Bonding is available at your local Alaska Job Center or toll-free at 877-724-2539. Fidelity Bonding through the Alaska Department of Labor is 100% federally funded. This is an equal opportunity program. This message sponsored by the Department of Labor.
The soldier who was killed by a brown bear on Tuesday at Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson has been identified as 30-year-old Staff Sergeant Seth Michael Plant. Plant is from Florida and has been stationed at J-Bear since July 2021, according to the U.S. Army in Alaska. On Tuesday afternoon, Plant was with two other soldiers setting a course through the woods for navigation training west of the Anchorage Regional Landfill, says John Pinnell, a spokesman for Army Alaska. He says the group was in a remote wooded area away from main roads.
Well, it's part of the boreal forest. It's, you know, it's woody, lots of small brush. This time of year, there's not, you know, it's not completely overgrown with small brush and leaves, but it still, it's, you know, it's Alaska terrain.
Investigators determined a brown bear sow attacked the group, likely defending its cubs. Responders found a den nearby with two cubs, according to Fish and Game. Plant was medevaced from the scene in a National Guard helicopter to the J-Bear Hospital, where he was declared dead. Another soldier from the group was taken to a hospital with minor injuries and released. Plant's commander said in a statement that Plant was a, quote, positive and dedicated leader who brought joy and energy to the paratroopers who served with him. Pinnell said he didn't have information about whether the group was carrying bear spray or a gun.
That's part of the ongoing investigation, is to find out, you know, what happened and if there's any change that needs to be made to the current way we do business.
Fish and Game says it is still trying to find the bear and asked anyone who sees a brown bear in Anchorage behaving aggressively or unusually to report it to them or call 911 for emergencies. Alaska is short on healthcare workers, especially nurses and nursing assistants. Experts say increasing our reliance on out-of-state workers is economically untenable. But as Claire Stremple reports for KTOO, one big roadblock to training a homegrown workforce is hiring enough nursing faculty at the state's university.
Nursing home administrator Kirk Elmore says his staffing woes really started at the beginning of the pandemic.
For the most part, we had some people that left to be travelers. We had some people that was just didn't want to work in healthcare during a pandemic.
By the spring of 2021, Elmore was struggling to fill gaps in the schedule at Juneau's Wildflower Court nursing home.
We realized really quickly that within about 6 weeks' time that we wouldn't be able to operate at full capacity, and that's when we had to close one of our wings.
He says it's an economic hardship for the small nonprofit to operate without all of its beds full. The closure resulted in a backup at the regional hospital as well. In February, it was holding 11 patients who couldn't find room in a nursing home that didn't require hospital-level care any longer. Elmore hired traveling nurses to partially reopen the closed wing, but Wildflower Court is still not at full capacity. He said he'd like to hire about a dozen nurses or certified nursing assistants, but no one is applying for the job openings.
And so our concern is this is just going to get worse.
Jared Kosin directs Alaska's Hospital and Nursing Home Association. He says the only way to sustainably address it is to
really train Alaskans and give them opportunities to enter the healthcare workforce and fill those jobs.
He says not enough healthcare workers are entering the workforce, and the pandemic just exacerbated a nationwide shortage that was already acute in Alaska. The state is already heavily reliant on out-of-state labor, called travelers. They're more expensive to hire and less likely to stay here. As a result, Alaska has some of the most expensive healthcare in the nation. Last month, Kosin told legislators that, from an economic standpoint, the state has to be able to develop its own healthcare workforce, or those costs could go up even more.
To be direct, the situation for our pipeline and how we're developing Alaskans to go and take healthcare jobs is underperforming so severely that we really can only go up. We're so bad right now that we can only really improve.
He says there's a lot of homegrown interest in healthcare education, but there's a huge problem. The state's biggest nursing program has to turn away two applicants for each one they accept.
We get a lot more applications than what we have seats.
Carla Hagen directs the nursing program at University of Alaska Anchorage.
Just as there's a nursing shortage, there's also a nursing faculty shortage. So obviously, if we had more nursing faculty, we would be able to, you know, open the doors wider, so to speak.
She says academia doesn't typically pay as much as being a practicing nurse, which is another challenge. But nearly all of the school's graduates get their initial licenses in state. Last month, most of the graduates from the university's Fairbanks program went directly to work in a local hospital.
Our mission is to try to provide that education and accessibility to nurses that will be staying in their own communities and, you know, building really that pipeline to, you know, meet the healthcare needs.
There's some forward movement. The state pledged $2.1 million to the university to support nursing faculty recruitment and retention. And another nursing program at Alaska University of the Pacific was just nationally accredited.
This is Cranberry. It's our largest home, but this is Huckleberry, the home that had previously been closed.
Back at Wildflower Court in Juneau, Kirk Elmore says he's glad he got some financial help to attract traveling staff so he could open up a few more beds at the nursing home. But he says those workers are likely temporary, and staff is still stretched thin.
Well, one of the unfortunate side effects is that is people are working, having to work more hours. Overtime, a lot of people are still postponing vacations and times to get away because they're needed here to fulfill those vital roles.
We pass an occupational therapist in the hall. It's a challenge, she says, but there are a lot of big hearts in the building, and everyone's doing the best they can. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
An Anchorage physics teacher will spend a year in Washington, D.C. working on national education policy. Diamond High School teacher Jennifer Childress was one of 15 teachers chosen for the Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellowship. Teachers in the fellowship work with government agencies as they develop new STEM curriculum. Childress will work with the Department of Defense.
As you go up through the Department of Defense, they need people who can do science and math and technology. And so they want to make sure that students are getting a good, strong education and are being encouraged to go into those fields.
The fellows will also work to identify challenges within STEM education. One issue Childress hopes to work on is increasing representation of female scientists in physics.
We've caught up a lot in the biology areas and health, medicine, but we have not caught up particularly in physics and in engineering.
Childress wants other teachers to know they can apply for national programs, too. She says it's important for students to see their teachers continue to learn and try new things.
I think it sets a really good example for students that as a person, I'm continuing to push myself to learn things and grow and have different experiences, not get stagnant. But I also think it's really important to help students see that what they're learning in the classroom stays relevant.
Childress's fellowship begins in August.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The special primary election for U.S. Representative is June 11th. Voters will automatically receive a ballot in the mail starting April 27th. No regular polling places will be open on Election Day. You will vote for only one candidate, and you must return your ballot by June 11th with your signature, identifier, and a witness signature. If you will not be at your current mailing address or do not receive a ballot, contact the Division of Elections. You can vote in person at the Division's regional offices beginning May 27th. Offices will be open on weekdays between 8 and 5, on weekends with limited hours, and on Election Day between 7 and 8. For the full schedule and a list of additional in-person voting locations, visit the Division's website at akvoteearly.alaska.gov. For assistance in Alaska Native languages, please call 1-866-954-8683. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Elections.
Today marks the end of National Nurses Week, a celebration that ends on Florence Nightingale's birthday. In Anchorage, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium packed the week with events to celebrate their nursing staff, from pizza parties and organized hikes to a rooftop carnival. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early visited the carnival and has more on how nursing staff are breathing a little easier after 2 years of a pandemic.
Nurses stand in line waiting for popcorn on a sunny afternoon atop the ANTHC parking garage. It's one of roughly a dozen colorful booths at the carnival. Mary Martin is president of ANTHC's nursing staff and is the event's main organizer. She says after 2 years of having to wear masks and other protective gear around each other, seeing the smiles of her fellow nurses is a joy.
Oh man, it's amazing. It's just outstanding. People are laughing, having fun. Just the energy is high. And it's a beautiful day. I think the sunshine is just making everybody happy as well, too, with all the sweets.
Near the popcorn, there's another booth that buzzes with a cotton candy maker and fills the rooftop with an air of faint sweetness. The lighthearted carnival is a far cry from the intense days that Anchorage nursing staff had to endure over the past 2 years, wading through spikes in COVID-19 cases, severe illness, and death. Sometimes they were the only source of comfort for their patients. Jackie Cantrell is director of nursing for the intensive care unit at ANTHC. She says when the CDC issued guidelines barring people from visiting patients, it left some of them without their family in their final moments.
Where you would have someone in end of life needing, you know, wanting their family by them, we weren't able to facilitate that always. And so that put nurses at the bedside during end of life.
One way ANTHC has tried to keep their nursing staff in high spirits was to throw several crafternoon series where nurses could leave their hectic workplaces and focus their minds on meditative arts and crafts.
Changing is a drive, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I like it.
At a booth at the carnival, Caitlin Lowen is walking nurses through how to make decorative tiles by painting and then adding rubbing alcohol to make distinct patterns.
It's really meant to be like a reflective moment for our staff to take away from the bedside or away from their units to use their creative minds and to be with other people in a different setting and to get to make something beautiful to take away from this environment for themselves.
In addition to the heavy workload, ER nurses like Marcy Guest said it was also disheartening to hear from people who weren't taking the pandemic as seriously as health officials. She received apathy at best and insults at worst. Guest said it also didn't help that staff were stretched thin.
It's been very trying. There's been shortages everywhere, like for nursing and doctors and CNAs and respiratory and housekeeping and everybody that it takes to run a hospital.
But you wouldn't know how trying the last 2 years had been from watching guests smile and encourage people to try to hit her in the face with a whipped cream pie. Her booth produced laughs and cheers as contestants walked up, took aim, and... It's the second pie to the face guest has taken this afternoon.
Because the other person, she just ran up and threw it in my face. Like, so the first person to actually get me, yep.
While the pandemic is ongoing and COVID-19 cases continue to pop up in Alaska, it's gotten to a point where, for one sunny day, nurses could relax, meet with colleagues, enjoy some treats, and, if their aim is true, attempt to hit their boss with a whipped cream pie. All right.
I made my best here.
Here we go.
In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Last week, a crew of researchers set out on a mission to find the wreck of a cannery ship that sank in southeast Alaska over 100 years ago. As KSDK's Sage Smiley reports, the process of trying to find and identify a shipwreck involves a lot more than just looking in the water.
30 years ago, off the jagged cliff shores of Coronation Island in southern southeast Alaska, Gig Decker and a couple of friends, working with their nonprofit, the Southeast Preservation Divers, found an anchor chain about 70 feet underwater.
When we first ran across the chain, it was obvious on the sounder that we had found it. I mean, it was very, very distinctive.
Not just any anchor chain.
And, you know, I felt 80-90% sure that it was the chain from the Bengal.
The Star of Bengal was an iron-hulled, 270-foot cannery vessel that went down in a storm in 1908, killing over 100 people. Most of them were cannery workers from China, Japan, and the Philippines.
And so I went down and had a chance to go to the anchor and then follow the chain to the wreck. So I was really happy to be able to be the first one, I thought, in 100 years that had seen it.
Decker and the Southeast Preservation Divers had been searching for the wreck in hopes of revisiting its history and registering it as a historic site.
It was a huge thrill. I mean, I can only think of a couple things in my life that really did it for me, and that was definitely one of them.
Decker became interested in shipwreck diving over the course of his 38 years as a commercial harvest diver.
So I had a chance to cover many, many miles of the coastline, and I ran into all kinds of variety of wrecks, from ancient wrecks to gill netters and trollers and sport boats. And shipwrecks kind of embody a tangible aspect of history.
Decker has spent decades researching the Star of Bengal wreck, and while he says he's almost sure what he saw on the seabed was the Bengal, there's still quite a bit left to do before he can be certain.
The next step, I've always known, is to get out there with a bottom mapping system to where we can do a 3D model of the wreck itself, the cove and the entry to it, and then most importantly, having a state-certified underwater archaeologist out there to claim that it was, in fact, the Bengal.
That process started May 6th as an 8-person research crew set out from Wrangell aboard the Alaska Endeavor and headed for the site of the wreck. Part of their investigation is finding out where precisely the wreck is located. Decker dove what he believed to be the site more than 30 years ago and didn't have GPS mapping. This time, they're taking a more high-tech approach. Sean Adams is in charge of the expedition's arsenal of sonar equipment, aerial drones, and a device known as a magnetometer, which senses iron, useful when looking for an iron ship.
It's a perfect target for the magnetometer.
The team isn't just relying on high-tech gadgets to locate the lost ship. They are also turning to the historical record. Before leaving on their expedition, the crew stopped by Wrangell's museum to look at photos that seem to have been taken by the party sent to bury bodies after the Bengal went down in 1908. Researcher Sean Dillis says that he looked all over the country for photos like these.
I think the Nolan Center played a critical role in this. I've looked in archives all over the country, and we still don't know exactly who took them or on what day, but it's a very reasonable guess, I think, to think it was a week after or so, within a week of the wreck and by the burial party.
The tiny, square, black and white photos with cursive writing seem to indicate one of two coves along the southern coast of Coronation Island could be the site of the wreck. For Decker, the commercial diver who thinks he found the Bengal 3 decades ago, the search is not just about finding a sunken ship. It's about correcting the historical record.
There's people, we can't bring them back, you know, but we can get the story straight that they didn't die in the hold because they're hiding. They were very courageous people to put themselves in the position they did, and they were murdered by cowardness.
The researchers plan to share their findings with the public when they return. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
And the crew of the Alaska Endeavor will host a webinar to share some of their research and the results of their explorations tomorrow at 9 a.m. Alaska time. Find a link at alaskaendeavor.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Claire Strempel in Juneau, Olivia Eberts in Bethel, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Wesley Early and Lex Trinan in Anchorage, and Sage Smiley in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Parents, did you know that 1 out of 4 Alaska high school students currently use e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are easy to use and easy to hide. What teens breathe in and out from e-cigarettes is not safe. It contains cancer-causing chemicals, toxic metals, and nicotine. Nicotine can lead to addiction. It can harm brain development and hurt memory, learning, and attention span. Parents, talk to your teens about vaping. Visit livevapefree at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quitline.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.